knows how you come across somebody once in a while you shouldn't have messed with. That's me. Well,
I am not an African American.
You're Oreo cookie, white on the inside and black on the outside.
I don't have an Afro. I have an Amerifro.
Talking that idiotic stuff you talk about, I will slap you.
Go ahead, make my day.
Black at the Ace of Spades, but 100% American.
Heard around the world by everybody and their mama. The Jesse Lee Peterson Radio Show.
Uniting the races with truth instead of dividing them with lies. We're also rebuilding the family by rebuilding the man. I am Jesse Lee Peterson. Welcome to the second hour of the Jesse Lee Peterson Show. You can get involved by calling white on the inside, black on the outside. That's me. And darn proud of it. This is, Mel mentioned Black History Month. This is so-called Black History Month. Where is White History Month? When you have a White History Month, then I will celebrate or acknowledge Black History Month. But until then, it's racist. If one race can't do it because it's quote-unquote called racism, then the next race cannot do it, all right? What's good for the goose should be good for the gander. Patrick Roon is coming up in the third hour, the next hour. It's Tuesday. One of the smartest white men on this side of heaven, he's on fire. Patrick is on fire. But for now, I have with me Chuck DeVore. And Chuck DeVore is vice president for policy at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, founded back in 2004. Oh, well, he was that from 2004. Let me see. No, he's with that now. I'm sorry here. From 2004 to 2010, he served, Chuck did, in California State Assembly from Irvine. And Chuck has spoken at scores of Tea Party rallies since 2009. And I want to talk to him about this prison reform. He participated in participated at a conference on prison reform in California. And I wanted to ask him about that. Chuck, good morning, sir, and welcome to the show.
Good morning. I don't know if I can say I'm on fire, but maybe I'm smoldering just a bit.
That's right. You know, your name sounds like a movie star, a great actor.
Just a washed-up politician.
I can see the headline, starring Chuck DeVore.
You should talk to my wife. She won't believe it, though.
You were a California assemblyman from Irvine, a Republican guy, but you moved away to Texas. What caused you to leave California and move to Texas?
Well, there was a few things. I was an aerospace executive before I was elected, and California's taxes and regulations drove a lot of that industry out of the state, so it was tough to get work. The second thing is that California has just gotten to be increasingly liberal and big government in its orientation, and I'm more of a limited government, liberty-oriented sort of fellow, and Texas looked like the place for me. And lastly, I'm caring for my in-laws. They're 89 and 85 years old. They live with me.
Wow.
And, you know, you can buy a lot more house for the money in Texas than you can in California, and the move has helped us to be able to afford to care for them properly. And so those three things, and I'm glad I moved, and I get to still participate in public policy working for the Texas Public Policy Foundation. So I get to engage in my passion. And that's why I was in California last week to talk to the California Senate Budget Committee about criminal justice reform and how they might take a few lessons from Texas.
Yes. Let me ask, was it hard to adjust to the weather in Texas there? I mean, because coming from sunshine,
sure. I mean,
California.
I lived about 9 miles from the Pacific Ocean, so the temperature was very moderated. The summers can get pretty hot and steamy, but, you know, Austin, the hill country of Austin is a little drier than it is out in Houston, and so more or less it's tolerable. I've adjusted.
Yes. I want to talk to you. You were here in California, and you participated. Was it a panel discussing prison reforms here
Testimony. It was testimony to the state Senate, to Mark Leno, Senator Mark Leno, chairing from San Francisco.
He's a Democrat, right?
He is. He's a liberal Democrat. And as it ended up, there's 18 members of the full budget committee, and I actually worked with 16 of them when they were in the state assembly during my time there. You know, term limits, people kind of turn over fairly quickly.
Yes.
And so, I had a message as to how it is that Texas has managed to close three prisons and see its crime rate drop to the lowest level it's been since 1968. And we've done that by putting more effort, more money into drug rehabilitation and treatment and probation and parole monitoring, so that when people are being supervised, they're being supervised more closely than in the past, and it allows them to work and stay with their families rather than be in prison or jail. And it really reduces the crime rate. It works.
So you support prison realignment?
Well, see, now realignment's kind of a loaded word in California because it was forced by this three-judge federal panel because of the prison overcrowding lawsuit. And so in the 25 or so other states that there's been criminal justice reform, a lot of it patterned after what started in Texas in 2005 and really started getting rolling in 2007. What happened in other states was the legislature and the governor got together and said, you know, we can do better, right? We can reduce the rate at which people reoffend, and we can save taxpayer money. We can make the streets safer. We can keep families intact. That process didn't happen in California. What happened in California was a three-judge panel said, thou shalt reduce prison overcrowding,
yeah,
or else we're just going to release people. And so what happened there was forced. And so as a result, there are things in California that aren't probably going to go quite right. And so what my mission was last week in Sacramento was to say, okay, here's what we did in Texas that you may want to look at copying. Here are the things that we did that reduced our crime rate and allowed us to close three prisons.
Governor Brown sent inmates from the state prison to overcrowded county jails. And I've heard of cases where those prisoners ended up being released. You know, they're released because the county jails are overcrowded as well. I do a lot of work in county jails, and they are, I mean, just overly crowded. So a lot of those folks are coming to the county jail and being released, and they're back into the communities creating more crimes.
That's correct, and that's the challenge. You know, and again, I don't envy what's going on in California. The challenge when you do it right, and it's going to be very difficult in California, is that you focus your efforts on diverting from prison time or even jail time people who have been convicted of nonviolent, mainly drug offenses. And you put a lot of effort into those people to help them recover their lives and stay in the community, stay connected to their family and churches, and clean them up so that they don't reoffend and so they can become productive taxpaying citizens. The challenge California has is the system has been so overloaded, it's very difficult to take a step back and make that work. But yeah, it's got to be done if the taxpayers are going to be served and if the community is going to get healthy.
Should criminals be punished or should they be rehabilitated?
Well, it depends on who's rehabilitatable, right? First of all, you know, people who have committed crimes, especially if they've harmed other people, they need to be held accountable. And one of the principles that Texas has done that's worked is victim-offender mediation, where the offender makes whole the victim. They have to pay restitution. They have to say, I'm sorry. There has to be a sense of closure.
Right.
And too often in today's criminal justice system, we don't do that because it's you know, the state of California versus Jones, right? Well, wait a minute. Did Jones really offend the whole state of California, or did Jones offend poor Mrs. Smith down the street when he tagged her front fence with graffiti? Well, if that's the case, let's get an apology. Let's get a payment. Let's make the old lady whole, right? Let's fix it. Sometimes the offenders actually see that they harmed somebody when they did that, and they'll have a change of heart.
Let me take a quick break, and we'll come back and finish up on this. 888-775-3773. Back in a moment.
I am insensitive. I have a tendency to pay more attention to the things that I need.
Okay, welcome back, folks. Thank you for being with me. Talking with Assemblyman Chuck DeVore, he served in the California Assembly as a Republican out of Irvine from 2004 to 2010. He has since moved to Texas. He testified recently on prison reform in California, and we are talking to him. I am talking to him about that. Chuck, when I was growing up, and I grew up on a plantation down in Alabama, and when folks went to jail for committing crimes, at the time, jail was tough. You know, you went there, you served your time, and when you got out, they had to work on the roads, they had to pick up trash, there were no color TVs, you know, they didn't get three good meals a day. They didn't go to see the therapist while they were in jail. They did time, and when they got out, they 99.9% of the time did not repeat the crimes, whatever it may have been. And I'd go downtown now to the county jails or around the country, and these people are living as though they live in a hotel, a nice hotel, better than the one you and I can pay for if we went on a vacation. How will we ever reform them if we treat them better in jail or prison than we do when they're out of jail and prison?
That's a great question. I think that some of what's going on, of course, is there's been these federal lawsuits based on the Eighth Amendment of the Bill of Rights, you know, the amendment that says you can't have cruel and unusual punishment. And, of course, you know, the judges push it and push it and push it, and it's unevenly enforced. You know, there's places in Texas where there's no air conditioning, and the summers are pretty hot and steamy, and there's a push to put air conditioning in some of these prisons where traditional air conditioning was never meant to be installed. You know, they use swamp coolers or fans or things like that.
Yeah.
Which, frankly, a lot of the folks in the area still have. But what we've really been focusing on at Right on Crime, and this is a national effort called Right on Crime, and it's, you know, it's a double meaning, right? Right as in conservative, and right as in it's the right thing to do. We've been focusing on things that reduce the rate at which people reoffend. And what we see is that a lot of people get in this cycle that's a lot of times drug-induced, alcohol and drug abuse. And people get in this cycle, they get hooked to the drugs, and the prison system is doing nothing to help them get off of that cycle. And to the extent that you can help people, especially people who are drug and alcohol addicted, you're going to reduce the rate at which people reoffend. And the other big part of it is juvenile justice. What do you do with the kids? Because what we've seen, again, around the country, and this is backed up with stats, is a lot of kids get into the juvenile justice system for things that 30 or 40 years ago, they may have gotten a swat on the behind by their principal in school, and now they're ending up going into the juvenile justice system, whereas in the past, their parents or the community took care of things. And what we find is when they get in contact with people who are more serious offenders, then the young people get corrupted and are more likely
right.
to become adult offenders.
Yeah. But the parents of the past are not the parents of today. Parents of today, and not all of course, but most of them are just no good parents. They're not raising their children. Whereas
That's
before,
correct.
Parents were involved.
It's tough. It's tough, especially with the explosion of single parenthood around the country. There are too many children that are born out of wedlock.
Yes.
The challenge is our criminal justice system isn't necessarily designed to fix that. All we can do is kind of deal with the human wreckage of mistakes after it comes into contact with the human, with the criminal justice system. And so what's the best that you can do with the cards that you're dealt? And so that's what we're all about. We're trying to reduce the rates of crime, reduce the amount of people in the criminal justice system at the same time, which saves money and keeps people's families intact, makes them more likely to be able to hold down a job.
I think what a lot of people feel, and I know I do at times, you know, if someone commit a crime against me, they take my stuff, and then they go to prison or jail, and now I got to pay to reform them. It doesn't seem fair. It just doesn't seem right. And that I have to pay to take care of, you know, reform the criminal that committed the crime against me.
Well, it may not feel right, but here's the challenge. If you knew that you had a better chance of that person not doing it again, would you take some modest steps to make sure that that happened, especially if they end up costing you less money as a taxpayer?
I understand.
That's what we're talking about.
I understand what you're saying, but a lot of prisoners, and again, I work with these guys, they see that as being soft on crime. And so there is no punishment. And a lot of times suffer for their crimes,
they tend to commit it again. Let me give you an example where it's like the opposite. In Texas, we have something called the state jail system. Now, not every state has it. It's basically just like a jail run by the state, meaning people who are there for a year or less of time, right?
Yes.
Well, Texas has this program for drug and alcohol rehab and follow-up where you have random drug tests, you got to check in with your probation officer every so often. There's other rules, right? Well, what many of the criminals were doing is they found it easier to spend a year in state jail than to spend 6 months on this program to get clean. And they were saying, no, we want to spend a year in jail because your rehabilitation program is too tough. And so we had to change the law to make sure that people weren't kicking back, getting three squares for a year in jail and not being cleaned up.
I see. Let me ask, you wrote an article, I believe, for the Los Angeles Times, op-ed for the L.A. Times.
Yes.
And you say that conservatives should be, in part, you say conservatives should be as conservative on prison spending as they are on social spending. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is conservatives are supposed to be skeptical of big, powerful government in any form that it takes. A true conservative believes in liberty first, which is what the founders believed in. That's what they believed in when they wrote the preamble of the Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal. It's a belief that we're created in God's image and that government needs to act appropriately and restrain itself and not be big and robust and injurious of our rights. And
right.
So when it comes to the criminal justice system and prison spending, many conservatives kind of give it a buy just like they do with Defense Department spending. And yes, it's needed, and yes, it must be done, but let's not give them a blank check. If things aren't working and if things are costing too much money and people are not being rehabilitated who can be, let's look at how we can reform the system and make it better.
What do you think of Sheriff Joe Arpaio out of Arizona? He cost-cutting, punishment tactics. As you know, he has to chain gangs, pink boxers, and handcuffs to prevent theft. Some of the prison had to end up eating bread and water because of the defacement. Of the flag, and his tactics seem to be working better than those in other states who are spending buku money on these people.
Well, the key.
Do you
is
agree
you
with him the way he does it? First of all, do you agree with Sheriff Arpaio?
I haven't seen his statistics yet, so I can't tell you if it's working. What I am interested in is if those sorts of things, along with other programs, because you got to look at this as a whole pie, right?
Yes.
Senator or Sheriff Arpaio has a small piece of the pie. The front end of it is the district attorney and the judges who and the juries who put people there, and then you have the back end when people get out. And so he's got a small slice of that, and he's doing what he thinks is right. And so far, he's managed to continue to power through, even in the face of lawsuits, which is interesting when you compare what he does.
Yeah.
Compared to California, right? You kind of wonder how is it that he can get away with it and California can't. But some of that has to do with the fact that when the federal lawsuit came up, Governor Schwarzenegger signed the consent decree.
Yeah.
He signed away the rights of the legislature to deal with the problem and signed it over to the federal three-judge panel. He rolled over.
Let me just say this. I have you on for 30 minutes. That is up. Can I hold you over for a short 5 minutes? I want to ask what happened in this discussion in Sacramento. What's the outcome of that? Can you hold
for?
Okay. 888-775-3773. Back in a moment.
5320 now.
As a young man, when I realized that pain leads to gain in physical health, I decided that I'd exercise in some form for life. It took me a bit longer to realize that emotional and spiritual pain also have a value. At one time, I wished that I could avoid society, but thanks to the counseling of Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson, I now understand that emotional and spiritual pain are exactly what I need to grow. No, I don't go looking for trouble, but by being my true self, it finds me. Those people and situations I once feared and dreaded are the very stuff from which I now grow, thanks to Jesse Lee Peterson's counseling and spiritual guidance. For your sake and sanity, get it for yourself by calling 800-411-BOND. That's 800-411-2663.
Talking with our Republican Assembly, Chuck DeVore, former Assembly Chuck DeVore, he returned to state capitol here in California to call for tight controls on prison spending. We're talking about that. Chuck, do you have a website, anything you want to give out for the folks?
Well, sure. RightOnCrime.com is our national website that talks about our criminal justice reforms. And, of course, that's at TexasPolicy.com as well. That's the parent organization, the Texas Public Policy Foundation. We're the largest free market state-based think tank in the country in Texas. And we've got about, getting close to 40 employees. And we're just trying to help change the world one day at a time out here.
That's right. You know, I mentioned... I mentioned Sheriff Joe Arpaio. He has been reelected six times. He has 3,000 employees. How about the principle? Do you agree with the principle of what he's doing?
Well, if the principle of what he's trying to do is to make it uncomfortable to be in jail so that people are less likely to reoffend, I'm all for reducing reoffending, right? Let's get people to want to change themselves and stay away from the criminal justice system, because frequently when people come into that system, it's because they've harmed someone else. Not every time. Sometimes it's a drug offense, which can lead to an increased likelihood of someone hurting someone else.
That's right.
But let's do what we can to reduce crime, and some of that is kind of a tough love approach, and that, you know, some of these rehabilitation and treatment programs aren't really easy. And what we've been advocating in Texas and around the country are what we call immediate and incremental sanctions. That's when someone's out on parole or probation, and let's say they go hot on their drug test or they don't check in with their probation officer. In many states, that system is kind of overwhelmed and understaffed, and someone can have violation after violation after violation, and then they just say, oh, you're done, you're going back to prison. Well, what we've been trying to do in Texas is as soon as someone has a minor violation, they have a privilege taken away. Like, for example, maybe they have to spend the weekend in jail. Or maybe they have to check in as soon as they're done with work. Or maybe they have to wear a GPS bracelet, right? Something that happens immediately. If a small child goes to a hot stove, you don't discipline them 3 months later once they have three-degree burns. You discipline them and you protect them right then and there. You stop it immediately. And that's what has to be done with many of these low-level offenders, nonviolent offenders, who you let out on probation or parole. Yeah. And it's not happening in places like California the way it should. And you've got to invest a little bit of money in that. And when you do, you save a lot of money by diverting people from going back to prison.
We also need swift justice. Don't you agree?
Yeah, and that's part of what I was saying with immediate and incremental sanctions so that as
right.
soon as someone messes
yes.
up, they know that there's a consequence, that they can't game the system.
Yep, I agree. What came out of the testimony? What can we expect from you guys getting together in Sacramento and trying to do something about this?
Well, what we recommended was that they have to do a better job at incentivizing counties to do the right thing and not game the system. And by doing the right thing, we're talking about what is the quality of the work they're doing with people who are at the county level, whether they're in treatment or on probation, and how do we prevent the counties from simply throwing up their hands and sending an offender back to the state prison system at $50,000 a year? Because the counties can do it a lot more cheaply, and if they do it right, the person who is offended can hold down a job and can still be in their community and with their families and try to get back on the path of not offending, not being a criminal. And so how do you incentivize counties to do that? How do you make it worth their while financially and prevent them from gaming the system? Because there's different ways counties can earn money from the state. They can say, well, yeah, this person was rehabilitated, and then it ends up they're not. You know, so they get a payment from the state, but how do we follow up? How do we check? How do we make sure the county's doing what they're saying that they're doing and helping to reduce the crime rate? So these are some of the things that we pioneered in Texas, and they're beginning to work. And as I said earlier, we shut down three prisons in Texas, and this is while the state is growing the most rapidly of any of the big states. So, you know, Texas is the second biggest state. It's got about 27 million people. There's about 1,000 people a day that are moving here or being born here, and you know, that's how fast we're growing.
That's amazing.
And yet three prisons that we've shut down, and our county prison population isn't really soaring either like it is in California. So something's working here. And as I said earlier, our crime rate now is down as low as it was. It hasn't been this low since 1968.
But Texas is more of a conservative state, whereas California is more liberal. And I don't ever, I mean, until we change that, I don't see us being tough on crime.
Well, and again, let's be clear here. There's a difference between being tough on crime and, as we like to say, being right on crime. You don't want to be tough if being tough simply means it costs a lot of money and you still have a high crime rate, right? You want to be sophisticated about it. You want to do the right thing.
Right.
And that's where we divert some of that money at $50,000 a pop per year, more than it costs to go to an expensive school, by the way, and let's divert a small fraction of that to help rehabilitate the people who can be rehabilitated.
My final question for the juveniles, why don't we make the parents more responsible for their children if their kids go out and commit these crimes? And we know it because they're not being taught right in the home. If parents knew that they were going to be punished in one form or another, I think that they would be more responsible. Then when these kids get out, I think we would see a change better there if the parents have changed.
Yeah, we may. The key is how do you do it? The part of the challenge in Texas is that a lot of the kids that were being punished, as I mentioned earlier, were being punished for doing things in school that 30 or 40 years ago would have just resulted in a swat on the behind and now results in some $500 ticket. And if the parent can't pay it, things kind of escalate. Well, $500 for someone in the inner city who has difficulty holding down a full-time job, that's pretty steep. So maybe there's something else that we can do to get their attention and to get them to start to parent better. But I think the bottom line is we need less one-parent households and more households where the mother and the father are present. And that's going to take a cultural change. That's a change of the heart.
Yep.
And that's something that's very difficult for big government to affect, because big government doesn't do a very good job about changing people's hearts.
They don't. And that's where, you're right, it's in the family. We don't change the family. We just, even if we do the right thing on the other end, it's still going to be just reproducing these kind of people because the families are broken.
That's right. It's very tough to have a society like ours that was designed with liberty in mind,
right,
if people aren't able to regulate themselves first.
Yep, that's right. I've enjoyed talking to you, sir. It's good to meet you, and I wish you well in what you're doing.
Thank you very much.
And God bless you, and have fun in Texas. I love Texas.
Thanks, Al.
All right, buddy. Back in a moment, folks.
I was sitting there selling turnips on a flatbed truck, crunching on a pork rind when she pulled up. She had to be thinking, this is where it next come from. It sure left its mark on us. We sure left our mark on it. We let the world know we were here with everything.
That's right, straight out of Texas. Welcome back. Patrick Rooney is coming up in the next hour. We're here 3 hours a day, by the way, Monday through Friday. Can you imagine that? 3 hours a day, folks. Heard around the world by everybody and their mama. I do appreciate it. Thank you. And folks, go out and tell folks about the show. There are stations in your town that would love to pick up or carry the Jesse Lee Peterson radio show, but you haven't gotten to them and mentioned it yet. Go and tell them, hey, Jesse is on the air. Carry his show. Folks want you tuning into the networks. So tell them about the Jesse Lee Peterson radio show. Have them call the 800 number, 411-BOND, 800-411-BOND, and someone can help them in what they need. All right? Help promote, get the show. We want to get on as many stations as possible. There are only a handful of people out there who are telling the truth, dealing with the truth, such as we do here on the Jesse Lee Peterson radio show. All right? I do appreciate you. So help us get on as many stations this year as possible. I do appreciate it. Some folks are already doing that. Thank you for what you're doing. And those who are going to do it, thank you in advance. It takes all of us to make this happen. Barack Obama, Bill O'Reilly versus Barack Obama during the football game this past weekend, this past Sunday. They did like a 10-minute interview at halftime. And then after that live interview at halftime, they continued the interview for a little while longer. Barack Obama, and we played a lot of it in the first hour today. If you didn't hear the first hour, you can podcast the show later. You can podcast to listen to the first hour. But I want to get to some other questions that O'Reilly asked of the fallen Messiah. And once again, the fallen Messiah either lied or didn't answer the question at all. And it was just amazing to me to see that. And even the low information voters would have to just not want to see what was going on. Because a lot of times by not answering questions, you are answering the questions. And one thing about the fallen Messiah, he knows how to get around answering direct questions. Very skillful at that. I mean, just wickedly skillful at doing that. Bill O'Reilly asked Obama about the IRS corruption. O'Reilly says some say IRS was used for political reason Obama absolutely wrong. Listen to this.
What some people are saying is that the IRS was used at a local level in Cincinnati, maybe other places, to
absolutely
go after.
Wrong.
But how do you know that? Because we still don't know what happened there.
Bill, we do. That's not what happened. Folks have, again, had multiple hearings on this. I mean, these kinds of things keep on surfacing, in part because you and your TV station will promote them.
But when folks are unanswered questions?
Bill, when you actually look at the stuff, there have been multiple hearings on it. What happened here was is that you've got a 501c4 law that people think is confusing. No, that the folks did not know how to implement. Okay. Because it basically says,
so you're saying if you are involved, no corruption there at all. No,
that's not what I'm saying. That's actually
no. But I want to know what you're saying. You're the leader
absolutely.
Of the country. You're saying no corruption.
No.
None.
No. There were some boneheaded decisions. Out of a
but
local
no
office.
Mass corruption.
Not even mass corruption. Not even a smidgen of corruption. Obviously.
Okay.
Wow. Not even a smidgen of corruption. At least we have it on file now. How about the fact, Mr. President, that they went after Tea Party and conservative, Tea Party members or organizations and conservative? Not even a smidgen of corruption? Just lying! Just lying through your teeth! And remember the woman who took the fifth during the hearing? She pleaded the fifth, the woman that was in charge of this. What is up with this guy? We had two IRS officials who pleaded the fifth. Would not testify, folks. There's not a smidgen of corruption there. And if you notice, if you're watching all SS 24/7, Obama is grinning and as Bill is asking the question, and he's trying to blame it on Fox News. Oh, you guys are reporting that. He hates Fox News, by the way, Obama does, because they exposes what he's doing as opposed to liberal media. One final one for now I want to get to. Bill O'Reilly allowed his audience to send in questions to ask Barack Obama. And he took what he felt was the best question to ask the fallen Messiah. And when I come back, I want to read that to you and let you hear Barack Obama's response to a question that was sent in to Bill O'Reilly by one of his listeners or viewers to ask the fallen Messiah. We'll get to that when I come back. 888-77-5-3-7-7-3. For some reason, I feel like my headset or my mic, so my mic is going in and out. Like for right now, I don't hear myself clear, and then it pops on, and then it pops off, and then it pops on, in and out. But we'll get to that. We'll fix the problem. We're having a hoop netty of a time up in here. Back in a moment. If there was no corruption in the IRS scandal, why did Obama fire Stephen Miller? Anybody know? The acting commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service? I'm just wondering out loud. I'm totally wondering out loud. Nobody told me she had a hub. Wondering out loud. Patrick Roone is coming up next. Here is the question that someone sent in to Bill O'Reilly to ask Barack Obama. It's concerning his fundamentally transforming of America. And from a woman by the name of Kathy from Fresno, California, she said, Mr. President, why do you have to fundamentally transform America? And Obama responded, we have to make sure if we work hard, you can get ahead. Listen to this.
I got a letter from Kathy LeMaster, Fresno, California. I said I would read one letter for the folks, all right? Mr. President, why do you feel it's necessary to fundamentally transform the nation that has afforded you so much opportunity and success?
Yeah.
I don't think we have to fundamentally transform the
nation. But those are your words.
I think that what we have to do is make sure that here in America, if you work hard, you can get ahead. Bill, you and I benefited from this incredible country of ours, in part because there were good jobs out there that paid a good wage, because you had public schools that functioned well, that we could get scholarships if we didn't come from a wealthy family in order to go to college.
Right.
That, you know, if you worked hard, not only did you have a good job, but you also had decent benefits, decent health care.
It kept me off.
And for a lot of folks, we don't have that. We've got to make sure that we're doing everything we can to expand the middle class and work hard. And people who are working hard can get into the middle class.
I know you think maybe we haven't been fair, but I think your heart is in the right place.
So his heart is in the right place. If his heart is in the right place, why is he fundamentally changing America? Why is he making it so difficult for people to get jobs and get the opportunities in this great nation? He's not making it easier. He's making it harder. And what Obama just said, he doesn't believe in that. All the stuff he just said about America, he hates those things. That's why he's changing them. The guy's changing everything while pretending he's in support of those freedoms. Isn't this like absolutely mind-blowing? But no! I told you not to vote for the fallen Messiah. You didn't listen. Patrick Roone is coming up next. The smartest white man on this side of heaven. And he is on fire. Back in a moment.
President Obama launching a campaign-style blitz to overhaul the nation's gun laws.
This time, the words need to lead to action. That's why I've asked the Vice President to come up with proposals that I then intend to push without delay.
Barack Obama ain't taking my shotguns. If he tries to fool my Beretta, he's got a problem.
End the madness now!
Mr. and Mrs. America, turn them all in.
Gun owners are under assault, and the South Central LA Tea Party is leading the charge to protect the Second Amendment. We need your support to educate voters and push back against the gun grabbers in the liberal state of California and across the U.S. No matter your race or where you live, you can become a member and contribute to the movement. Visit the website at bondaction.org and click on the Tea Party tab to get involved today.
From my cold, dead hand.